Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Gameable Audio. This is the episode number 8 on the thematic of water levels. I am your host, Christopher Quinnström. And yeah, what do we actually think about water levels? Considering, like, the major thought of people. People really dislike water levels. But one thing that really comes to mind is when it comes to the music of water levels. I'm just excluding everything going on with what's going on specifically for the water levels themselves. Of course, everybody can think what they would like on water levels. I personally kind of like them. They bring something new. Of course, some of the mechanics of moving around feels a bit sluggish, and that kind of could theoretically destroy the experience of the game, basically. But when it comes to the music, I don't know what is happening here, but holy damn, I really enjoy a lot of the water levels going on in video games. They're really mellow, they usually have really good melodies, so to speak. And there's a lot of great examples in this, and I've basically picked 4 different songs that are just a pure amazingness when it comes to the music in these games. Of course, they represent the game thematicism pretty good, I would say. On both good and bad, to be honest. But we will get into more detail when we're listening to them. But first of all, we're going out strong because we're going to Donkey Kong Country 2 and the Lockjaw Saga. There we have the first song of the week, the Lockjaw Saga from the Donkey Kong Country 2. And yeah, this is the 4th level in the game. And it kind of goes kind of grim, I would say, with this track. But at the same time, you're really just thrown into a large shipwreck. And I gotta say, it really sets the mood, considering the music we got in the first game, the Quantic Ambience. But it really sets the mood here, and I just love that within this game. So, when it comes to the music here, it is created and composed by the amazing British David Wise. The game was developed by the amazing and also well-known British studio, Rare. I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys know about this studio, have either played one of the games or heard about any of the games they have created. If not, this is the first time you're hearing on it. Look them up. Donkey Kong Country 2 was initially released on the Super Nintendo back in 1995 and was later ported also to the Game Boy Advance back in 2004, following up with eShop releases for the Wii U, 3DS, and finally for the Switch. And these were 2007, 2014, 2016, and on the Switch 2020. So you say 2000 all the time, but that's the Swedish way of saying it, I guess. I know a lot of people know about David, but at the same time, some of you guys might not have heard his name at all. I've been listening to Donkey Kong music for quite some time. I really adored these games when I was younger. I never really owned these games myself. I do own them today, but when I was younger, I didn't really own any of these titles. I usually ended up hanging out at friends' places and playing these games, and they are freakishly hard. Holy crap! For some reason, they are really still good. There are situations in the Donkey Kong Country games where, usually when you end up doing something problematic that makes you lose the game or the level, you usually blame yourself for what has happened. But at the same time, it's a lot of just trial and error in this game, and to that extent, I really adore these games, because when you learn these things, it's just like a Mega Man game. When you learn the patterns and what you should do at all the different points, they become kinda easy, to some extent. They're still hard, like a freaking Dark Souls game. But when you learn these patterns, they become better, and that feels just really good, in my opinion. For me, specifically with the second game, I ended up coming towards the end of the game, and then when I started up again to play the last of the levels within the game, the battery in the cartridge has gone dry. So I needed to change the battery, and for those who know what happens when you change the battery, you lose the save file. And I was at the conundrum now that's like, should I just skip the game and say, hey, it was okay or good? Or should I replay it from the start? And at this point in time, I was actually playing this together with my partner at that time. And she wasn't really feeling it to start it over again. I was like, but would you watch me play it in case? Because I felt pretty confident that I could get to the point we were quite fast. And she was fine with that. And so we did it. I actually started playing through everything, and I actually ended up getting there pretty quickly. Remembered most of the levels, therefore was kind of simple getting into it and getting into the mode of what Donkey Kong Country is as a game. So just like a Mega Man game, it is easy to pick up, and when you know everything with patterns and weaknesses and so on, it becomes pretty easy. But I really adore this, and I hope a lot of you guys love the Donkey Kong Country as well, or even the Donkey Kong Land games. I'm not so well-versed with the Land games, but I heard they're good. So, considering David Wise here, David is pretty known in the VGM community, and he has worked on quite a lot of games. Starting out with the Wizards and Warriors on the NES back in 1987. So he even started working on music for video games before I was even born. And he's still working on games. And it's amazingly super cool, in my opinion. Considering this also, that the music from this era, he was actually uncredited most of the times for the work that he did. But so we're sure on this, he was actually only the only known composer during this period in the beginning of Rare Games. Not Rare Games, I'm talking about Studio Rare here. But some of the popular picks that he have worked on, that I guess most of the people who listen to the podcast either know or have played this game, these games. So first of all, we have Snake Rattle and Roll from 1990s. We have Battletoads from 1991, Donkey Kong Racing from 1997, and Viva Piñata Pocket Paradise from 2008. And then we're running over to some other games that are not necessarily Rare games. So we're going first with Yooka-Laylee from 2017. These are Rare people working on these Playtronics. And lastly, we have... This is kind of a special thing, because he didn't necessarily work on the music itself. He actually worked on the conductive work, so being a conductor, for the Nashville Session Orchestra. And this was for the game Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart that was released back in 2021. And some of the lesser known titles that he has worked on, which I was more interested in as well, because when I saw them, I was like, what? They released games for this? First was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is, in my opinion, a cult classic. I really adored this movie when I was younger. That game was released back in 1989. We have Monster Max from 1994. And last but not least, Snake Pass, back in 2017. And Snake Pass is also an interesting one, because you're basically playing a snake, making sure you utilize physics and everything like a snake does to conquer different puzzles and so on. But overall, David has worked on over 55 games that I am able to see and logged into his credited list. Of course, if I go deeper, I might find some obscure titles that David might have worked on, or some other titles that hasn't been registered yet. But 55 games were the ones that I was able to find during my research. And of course, every time when I go deeper into research and taking a lot of time, I usually find something else, but I gotta draw the line at some point, moving onwards with the next song. And considering moving on to the next song, I think it's time to go for, I would say, kind of a fan favorite here, because I know a lot of, well, not a lot, but I know a lot of people do love this this soundtrack. I know a lot of people have recommended me to play this game, and both Luis and Daniel Unemark loves to recommend me the OST for this game. I'm talking about Skies of Arcadia. And, well, basically, Daniel reached out to me and commented on the last episode saying, like, hey, you should have this one, or hey, what, you should look into this song as well. Talking about two different games, but still the first one is still one that I really adore. I've been listening to this soundtrack a couple of times now, and it really holds up. It is a really well-written OST. Considering the game itself, I don't know when I will be able to play this. I don't own this game, and it is also quite a rare game as well. Not made by Rare, it is actually a rare game. We're talking about rare games now. So it does come with a price tag, so I'm a bit unsure. Unless I can borrow this at some point from a friend, I have no idea right now if or when I will play it. Anyway, this is Skies of Arcadia and the track Dungeon of the Cave. Guys, enjoy this track as much as I did, because holy moly, this was Dungeon of the Cave from the game Skies of Arcadia, and I don't know what, this sounds like a sad tune from Metroid almost. I don't know why, really. I think it is these bleeps and bloops that kind of happens in the middle of this track. I really adored it for many type of reasons. It is kind of easy going, and I just like that kind of dun 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 dun, because it gives me the vibes of Metroid for some reason. And I think they kind of use the same kind of ups and downs when they utilize their melody. But Skies of Arcadia has this kind of sadness almost over it, with this specific track at least. But I really liked it. It really resonates with me to some extent. I think this is a great song to just relax to. The eeriness of it, it seems kind of melancholic almost, to be honest. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I really enjoyed this one. So considering the soundtrack for Skies of Arcadia, this is not the first time we're listening to this. As I said before, Skies of Arcadia tracks have been requested multiple times, and I think we will not stop listening to Skies of Arcadia until we have listened to each and every track of the soundtrack at one point. But as we return to the amazing composers here, Yukata Minobe and Tatsuyuki Maeda, the game was yet again developed by the Japanese studio Overworks. The game was released back in October the year 2000, on the 5th of October. And this was released on Dreamcast. The game was also later ported to the GameCube, but then under the name of Skies of Arcadia Legends. And if we're looking into the composers here, it was actually Tatsuyuki who made this track specifically. And he has worked on about half of the soundtrack for this game that he did together with Yutaka. Tatsuyuki started working with audio for specifically games back in 1993. And when he did work for the game, the first one he did was for Golden Axe 3. He then followed up with Sonic the Hedgehog 3 back in 1994. And then he has been working on multiple Sonic titles, but also some other famous titles that we know of, at least not I know of, are titles such as The Panzer Dragoon from 1995, Shinobi from the PlayStation 2, which was released in 2002, Yoshi's Topsy-Turvy in 2004, Yakuza 4 back in 2010, and finally the latest game that he worked on was for Sonic at the Olympic Games Tokyo 2020, that was released exclusively for Android devices. Looking over at the counterpart on this soundtrack, Yutaka. He is also a composer we've been returning to on multiple occasions. This is a man with many strings on his instrument, to be honest. But he started out working on video games on Sakura Taisen 2 Kimi Shinitamu Koto Nakare. And this was released in 1998. And as many people might have guessed, yes, this is a Japanese game, which only was released in Japan. But also, just like Tatsuyuki, Yokata also worked on a lot of Sonic games. But he did not start out on Sonic 3, he started out on Sonic Adventures back in 1998, so it was a little bit later. And of course, later than Tatsuyuki, because Tatsuyuki started way earlier in the game industry than Yutaka. But just to select a few out of the Sonic franchise here, we have Sonic Pinball Party that was released back in 2003, and I actually had to look this up. I started getting into more and more pinball games, of course, and actually I don't remember seeing a Sonic Pinball Party, but apparently I've been looking for music for this prior to the search I did today when I was researching for this game specifically. But anyway, Spin Bottle Party, yeah, I don't think remember if I said it, but it was released back in 2003. Later after that, we have Sonic Unleashed I think it was even for Wii and PS4 and Xbox 360, if I remember correctly. Anyway, not important. This game was released in 2008. And the last Sonic title that Yutaka worked on was Sonic Forces, that was released back in 2017. Other titles that he'd been working on includes Astro Boy, that was released in 2004. And this was a release for PS2. I know there's multiple releases for Astro Boy for different consoles, but this was for the PS2, so we know where and how. After that, we have Odama from 2006, Harvest Moon, Trio of Tranquility in 2008, and his latest work for video games was the Space Channel 5 VR, Kinda Funky News Flash, that was released back in 2020. But yeah, I don't know much since, as I said, I haven't played Skies of Arcadia, so I'm a little bit unsure how water levels are actually handled. I know we're in some kind of cave, hence the name, Dungeon of the Cave. But I'm guessing walking around in a lot of water. Don't know much about that else, so I can't really say much more about Skies of Arcadia. On the part of graphics, it looks like it could be a little bit better than between a PS1 and PS2 game. But I know when it comes to games for the Dreamcast, I know some of them were really good looking and some not that much. And from what I've been looking at this game, it kind of gives me the vibe from that part. Graphic-wise, I think it gives me a little bit of icky feeling, but if everything else holds up, like fighting and etc., I think I can manage with this. I don't want to look into this game too much, to be honest, because if I want to play this as I kind of want to do, as many people has recommended this game to me. I feel like I shouldn't be digging too much, because then I might destroy the experience of the game. Anyway, on the top of it, destroying experiences in games, so let's head into the one big fuckfest, basically, of water levels. And I think, like, everybody would agree with me. Even though I love this game, I've been playing it so many times, but I'm always, always having a problem when I get to this level. Yes, I am talking about the underwater bombs from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'll make sure to lower the volume right here. I don't want to give people more PTSD than they might already have just listening to this song. Yes, people, when we're talking about water levels, I think for people that have played on the original or played when they were young to date, we'll think about this level, and this is the biggest reason why people hate water levels, basically. The underwater bombs level, basically, I think, if I remember correctly now, because I haven't played this game in a while, it is World 2, and you're basically running up on a dam, fighting off some foot soldiers and so on in the beginning, moving onwards to get past this. But in this specific level, you need to kind of walk around, not you're swimming around, sorry. You're swimming around in a giant maze, filled with things that will always kill you anywhere. And the areas to get through this freaking place is so freaking pixel perfect. It's crazy. And yeah, everything will slowly kill you over time. So yeah, it is. Did I forget to say again that it was a maze? So yeah, you better have crayons ready, because you need to freaking memorize this level so hard. You have four turtles to go through, and of course over time they will lose their HP unless you're really handling this pixel perfection perfectly. But I think everybody who played this game, it's mostly hating it because of this freaking level. This was like the killer of this game. Everything else is kind of cakewalk in consideration to this. Of course, you can see speedrunners like speed through this and it looks so freaking easy. But when you're playing this for the first time, you're really getting frustrated, to be honest. And when you die, you need to start over again. So that's not fun either. So when listening to this track, and of course, I remind myself over and over again, especially when we're talking about underwater levels. As I said prior to this episode when we started it out, I really adore water levels overall, but that's because I usually tend to forget this level. Because when you're thinking about water levels, there are still some very good, in my opinion. I still adore the water levels in Mario games, for example. You have a more sluggish kind of mechanic going on here, but they're still kind of straightforward to it. There's not much more danger when you're in water. It's just that you're slower, and everything keeps happening slower, but still it feels like the enemies are faster than you are. But of course, they're fish or bloopers. But in a level such as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we're talking about things that there's not that many enemies moving around. It's just the pixel perfection that you need to get through If not the algaes or seaweed that are electrifying and killing you, it's some other lightning traps that will kill you, or you will die of something, basically. And of course, you have a time pressure as well, because you need to disarm these bombs. Anyway, enough of me ranting about... Oh no, you see how passionate people can be when talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and this freaking underwater bombs. Anyway, no matter how horrible we may think about this track, I actually like this track. It kind of gives the stem of having the pressure you need to go, and there's something going on, but at the same time it kind of gives me an adrenaline push or rush, so to speak. And the reason for that, I don't know why, but it kind of resembles a little bit to the Contra series, and there might be some things to this as well. Let me move on this. And this is because this horrible but lovely track was composed by the Japanese Jun Funahashi. And the game, it was developed by the Japanese studio, which most of us know about, Konami. And the game was released back in 1989. It was initially released on the NES in Japan, but close to it, they also had a release for the US. And later, the year after, in 1990, it was released also in Europe. The game has been ported, but also re-released digitally on different consoles. The ports include the DOS, Amiga, Atari ST, C64, MSX, the Amstrad CPC, and all of these were released during the 1990s. The game was also re-released digitally, and this was on Wii through the eShop back in 2007. And considering Jun here, the composer, and this is the reason why I said we should wait a little bit when we're looking into this, because he has worked on a lot of different games in his career, and considering the games that he has been working on, it kind of resembles, if we're looking at or listening to the music from these games that he's been working on, it kind of is some similarities and resembling going on in between them. So, first of all, the game that he started out on was the NES game Crackout, which was released back in 1986. And over time, he has been working on about 2 to 4 titles per year. So I'm going to jump a little bit between the years, but also some of the... I will handpick some titles from the years that I'm actually picking. Of course, I'm going to talk more about the more popular ones, because if I start talking about things people don't know about, doesn't care really that much, I guess. But starting out at the 1988, the year I was born, we have the release of The Adventures of Bio Billy. The year after, we have Castlevania 3 Dracula's Curse. Following up on that year, we have Mission Impossible. And 2 years after that, we have the Contra Force. And this is also one of the things that I'm kind of resembling and getting at. It was kind of similarities for me with Contra, so it's nice that he actually worked on a Contra game later. Never heard of this game though, and considering when I looked this one up, I was actually interested and intrigued to kind of try it out, because it is a 1-2 player game just like the original Contra games, but this one was actually released shortly after Contra 3, which was released on the Super Nintendo. And in specifically in Contra Force, you're not playing just two characters, you're playing up to 4 characters, so you can basically switch between these characters. And don't really know what that means, but they included different kind of weapons and so on, so I wonder if the weaponry setups are differentiated between these characters. Anyway, onward. Next game is Bottom of the Ninth, which is a baseball game, which was released back in 1996. We have Frogger Beyond from 2002, one of my favorite games, Wise. And this is the sixth game, The Ark of Napishtim, back in 2005. I've been talking about this many times. Amazing soundtrack, highly recommend. Frogger Evolution back in 2006. And then his last game from 2007 was Stranglehold. So with a total of 49 games that we are able to see with Jun's name, either that he worked on the music or he did some other work within them, because he has done some other like voice acting work in some of these and sound effect for others. But still very interesting, and I think we're going to have to visit Jun another time as well to talk more in depth about him, to see because there's still a lot of amazing titles and a lot of titles working for Konami specifically. So maybe we can do some Konami special to look into, okay, this is a good range of composers that work for Konami games, etc. The next game we're going to listen to is a specific one because we're basically having the full game underwater. And still, this is a very popular game for people. And specifically, I think we will go into details. I think it's better we go into these details afterwards instead of prior to the song. So let's enjoy the really good. And this is a favorite of mine. I haven't played this game. I know the game. I will never play this game because it looks freaking horrible. Not horrible. It is a horror game to me. So we'll never play, but we'll freaking enjoy the OST. And now I'm sharing Abandoned Ship with you guys from the game Subnautica. There we have it, Subnautica, the last song of the week, Abandoned Ship. And yeah, as I said before and prior to this, I'm not gonna play this game because I freaking hate when things are underwater and things just pop up in your face all the time. And this is basically what is happening in Subnautica. All these freakishly horrible monster thingies in the water. Yeah, you can call them fish all you want. They're monsters in my head. But yeah, they will give me nightmares. So I've actually looked into this game more on a secure area, aka playthrough. Hiding my eyes, averting them. But considering Abandoned Ship in this game is happening when you're going around in your little U-boat. So when the U-boat is starting to get damaged and starting to cause fires and so on that you need to repair and everything, when you're at the point of kind of no return, this song will kind of fade in, and it really sounds like a full-on techno song almost, with some attitude added to it, and I really enjoy this one. But what really feels weird, you have this kind of dolphin like whale sounds and coming in at certain points in this song, and I don't know if they're added there for a reason, like, because if you have those leviathans and sea monsters attacking your ship, is it supposed to be like one of those fishy sounds, like, hey, they're attacking you and so on, because you have this kind of really pressure point of music adding to the kind of fear of what's going on or what's going to happen. But I really enjoy this track. I've been listening to this track so many times. It actually is one of my most listened to VGM songs on Spotify, to be honest. This one popped up in Discovery Weekly, and I just loved it. I listened to the rest of the Subnautica album, but no other track from that album stuck in my head like this one. I really enjoy it, the quickness of it, but yet so effectful. That's what I like about it. It comes, it goes, and it does that really well, and it leaves you with kind of a good bad taste in your mouth. You're feeling great, in my opinion. You're not feeling great in the game because you just lost your ship, but I don't care about that. I'm just enjoying the music. And I'm not going to lose my ship listening to this. I'm just going to listen to this on the radio. That's what I'm doing. Anyway, I'm just strolling off. But yeah, Subnautica is a game that is played underwater all the time. You're basically building a base, taking care. You're finding stuff. I don't know the story. I just seen people do shit. You capture fish, you put it in a tank, you build up your base, you travel deeper, you come up again, back and forth. Anyway, I feel like there's a whole lot of other podcasts that are way better explaining this because they actually play the game. So let's do my shtick and actually stick to the music. So the track here, it was composed by the Australian composer and artist Simon. And I hope I'm saying this correctly, Simon, but it's Chylinski, I think, is C-H-Y-Linsky. So I guess it's Chylinski. The game here was developed by the American studio Unknown Worlds Entertainment. And when it comes to Subnautica, it did release through Early Access. And this was basically through Steam's own Early Access. And this was in December the 16th in 2014, and this was of course then exclusively released for PC and Linux. The game did hit the full release on the 24th of January back in 2018, so it's not super long ago though. And during the time until the full release, it also had releases on consoles. And these were somewhat also pre-releases to this. Of course, they got continuous updates over time. But the following consoles were where you could play Subnautica on: the Xbox One from 2017, PS4 in 2018, and then Nintendo Switch, and also for PS5 2 years ago, so 2021. And considering Simon here, Simon is still a very young as a composer within the video game business, with only 3 games in his credits so far. And these starting out with The Natural Selection 2 back in 2012, following up with this game, and then lastly, Die Young Prologue, which was released back in 2019. But I am pretty confident when I say I believe that this might not be the last time that we either see or hear from Simon when it comes to video game music, because he has a really good soundscape, so to speak, when it comes to his work within music. So I really hope we will be able to see and hear more of this guy. But yeah. So, considering water levels, music is usually really freaking great when it comes to water levels. I know when it comes to mechanics, the sluggishness or the unfunness happening within water levels, it is very subjective. And due to that, it might become more frustrating for people to play water levels. And of course, I know this for a fact. There's a lot of people that I've been discussing with that really don't like water levels. To me, I'm just saying that it is part of the game, and I really enjoy this change of pace happening. Of course, there might be really frustrating parts, but of course, it's usually just simple and small segments of the levels that usually have that frustration. Overall, considering a water level, they usually end up, in my opinion, pretty good or pretty decent. So the four tracks that I picked today are from good and the bad, and I really overall just enjoy all of the tracks that I picked. So to sum it up, water levels just sounds great. We do adore them to a certain extent. It's just the mechanics that we don't like. But with that said, it is time to close up everything with this podcast. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed the tracks. So if you enjoy these tracks and just want to get to know me better, or want to listen to more epic and nice music from video games or even BitTune composers, etc., you'll find those episodes at videospelsklubben.se. You find them also on Spotify or in your closest podcast app. Just search for Gameable Audio and you'll find it. Feel also free to follow and comment on one of our social medias, either on Facebook or on Instagram. You search for Gameable Audio there as well and you find it. It helps a lot just for people to find through the algorithms and so on. So it's very helpful if you guys want to just stay connected, because I would love to talk about video games and video game music with you guys as well. Other ways you can support this podcast and for future content and quality upgrades, etc., but also in the end, future composers, you can always think about becoming a Patreon. It's $1 per month. I'm not taking for every episode. And as a thank you, we will have raffles and so on where people will be able to get some sort of video game content or as such. Also for people that does get a small little sticker, but also if you take any of the higher tiers, I'm sorry, I'm lost at words. Just enjoying everything, but for the tiers, for the higher ones, you also get shout outs in the podcast for those backers. And currently, for the awesome backers that we do have today, is Daniel Onemark, we have Lars Skenström, Titti Skenström, Kevin Wikström, and Mike Björkholm. Thank you so much for promoting and helping out with this podcast. It does mean a lot to me. Just so you know, it really does. It really does. Links to where you either can buy or support the composers behind the music that we'll listen to today. Of course, it's going to be hard to find music for the really old consoles, but of course, we can still support them in other ways. You'll find those in the main post at videospelsklubben.se. And when it comes to the next episode, yes, it is already recorded, and it is a special one. I'm actually talking to Alan Brash, from Game Grooves, which is a label and a podcast and etc. It's kind of a full kind of on system when it comes to video game covers. So in episode 9, we're basically going to talk, me talking to Alan Brash, and we're going through a little bit about the processes of how it kind of works, working a label and releasing music for video game music, but in covers. Super interesting episode, and I highly recommend everybody to come back when that one is released. So do remember, it is bi-weekly releases still, and I think I will keep this up with bi-weekly as long as I have so much other things to do. Because right now it is kind of hard to keep up with this, but I don't want to stretch this any further than bi-weekly. I still love doing this, I love the research and everything. Well, enough talk about that. So with that said, do take care, everybody, and see you all, guys, next time!